Do you want to introduce this? Am I the big daddy host?
Well, let me introduce you and then you can introduce me. How does that sound?
It doesn't sound like a madcap comedy at all, but go for it.
You're listening to Memory Static, things are going to be a little bit different tonight because I am not the host. This is Bailey, by the way, if you didn't guess. The host is actually Aaron Hi. Brothers.
Hi, everybody. You all might know me from such previous episodes as other episodes, because I've been on a lot of them.
and the reason for the switcheroo is because...
Say it's your birthday!
It's my birthday. And so we thought that I would choose
the
movie.
Please don't sue us for that, by the way.
Because I'm choosing the movie, I can't really interview myself, so...
I mean, you could. And I think that of anybody I know in this world, Bailey, you'd be the best at interviewing yourself.
I mean, I could make it entertaining.
Yeah, you could definitely make it entertaining, but...
Also very nerdy.
I feel like this is a fun way of doing it. You excited, Bailey?
Oh, yeah. I'm very excited. We've done so many things to prepare for tonight. We made amazing puff paint neon-colored shirts.
Totally.
I bought balloons.
Balloons.
And what did you do?
I made a pizza cake out of a cookie.
So excited.
I'm also like wearing my Crumb Ariel Monsters hat. Doc Martens. I got a cardigan over there. The Kurt Cobain. Because we're in the 90s now.
Yeah. I got black and white checkered tights.
Eric's jacket is legitimately like... Miami Vice and my grandmother went shopping together.
So if you've noticed a theme of all these things to all these things, it's because we were trying to go for very early 90s.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the time machine, you know, you got to encourage it a little bit. You got to tell it like, hey, this is where we're at. You know, we've been having some technical issues with it. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, yeah, it does need encouragement.
Yeah, so every once in a while, you got to let it know, be like, this is where we're going, dude.
Yeah. And the reason for the early 90s is because we are going to be watching the 1990s made-for-TV Disney movie, Shelley Duvall's Mother Goose Rock and Rhyme.
We also need to let y'all know that Shelley Duvall's name is in the title, and it was released as such. It's not Rock and Rhyme, or Rock and Rhyming Mother Goose, as some other releases have it. It is... Shelley Duvall's Rock and Rhyme.
Mm-hmm. That is so.
Released in 1990.
Well, I'm going to let you take it away from here.
So I ask you questions first, and then we step into the time machine, and then we're like, here is all this grand information.
Yeah, yeah. You'll ask me questions about, you know, my experience watching it as a kid, my memories of that, and then the time machine is all the facts.
Okay, cool. Well, I will put this this tome of facts that I have right here. Wait, son of a... What in the... Who in the... All right. We're going to start this off with... Did you have a favorite fairy tale growing up?
Ooh, a favorite fairy tale. Okay. Well, I have a hard time with favorites. Let me think. I really liked... I don't know. There's so many good ones.
We've talked about this a whole lot, too.
Yeah, I know, but...
Interpersonal lives, not on mics.
I really liked the ones that were darker. I really liked... Oh, here it is. I know what it is, you guys.
There is a finger pointing, ladies and gentlemen, boils and ghouls.
Just took a minute. Hansel and Gretel.
Dude!
Yes.
It's so metal. That one is like one of the darkest, especially like if you're like looking at the old German version. This is your interview. Go on.
I love Hansel and Gretel. I remember that my grandparents had like it wasn't a little golden book, but it was kind of like a little golden book of Hansel and Gretel. And I think that it just was always so frightening, you know, like the parents that don't seem to care very much for their children. They get lost in the woods. They lose their way. Birds eat their trail. And then they find themselves in, you know, up to this candy house, and they think there's this nice woman that's going to take care of them and maybe find their way home, help them find their way home. But no, she's going to eat them. She's going to eat them. But then they push her in an oven and cook her. I mean, it's like there's nothing darker than that.
Yeah, that's a pretty dark one. I've always had two questions. There are a lot of questions I have about this particular fairy tale. But when I was a kid, the biggest one was, why didn't the witch just eat her house? Like, I know that the candy house is meant to lure in children. Mm-hmm. But, like, as a child, I was like, man, this girl lazy. you know? Well,
I always imagined that, like, you know, maybe she got her powers or, you know, regained youth by eating kids.
Oh, so you gave a backstory where I was like, listen to this practicality. Boom.
I always had to like make up a reason, which is why I feel like there are all these like weird connections I would make in movies that had plot holes, because I trusted the movie makers so much that I was like, obviously this is intentional, so I just need to figure it out.
This explains a lot about memory static in general, because the movies that we have watched that have been connected to you or your family members have these massive plot holes, like The Frog Prince, huge amount of plot holes, lots of weirdness there. Mr. Boogity and Mr. Boogity 2, like so many of them. And this one is absolutely no exception.
No.
And please, like, I'm gonna tag in with you after we rewatch it so I can be like, so explain that one, Bailey.
Oh yeah, I think that it was really that it took me a long time before I realized that, like, sometimes people that are making these movies are lazy. Because I think I just always took for granted that all adults knew what they were doing.
Yeah,
and it was left to me to try to figure it out and explain it.
That's also probably why Hansel and Gretel was very terrifying to you as a kid. You're like, but I trust these people. Why are they trying to abandon me and cook me? So, okay. You'd say like Hansel and Gretel by far.
Yes. I was going to say Red Riding Hood, but then I remembered it was Hansel and Gretel, hands down.
Yeah. I mean, Red Riding Hood's weird. It's because like Hansel and Gretel is like obviously from Germany. Little Red Riding Hood has like a
France.
Lot of yeah. Little Red Riding Hood is French.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more oral before it became written down. I've always thought that Cinderella was pretty gruesome.
Yes, but I didn't read that version of it until much later. The Grimm's version.
Yeah, the Grimm's version.
Cut off her foot.
Yeah, or what's that one? It's the Grimm story about like my mother, she killed me. My father, he ate me. Now I'm a bird. Tweedledee, Tweedledee.
Oh.
You know that one?
Oh, yes. I get that one mixed up. Wasn't there one with like the brothers that they all turned into birds? And
that's the swan one, the seven swan one. That's a French one, and I love that one. That was one of my favorite ones when I was a kid. And like the sister has to spend 7 years, and like one tunic takes a year, and it's mm-hmm. made out of the super nettle, but she can't talk. But a king falls in love with her even though she can't talk, because no one cares. And yeah, that one's weird too. There are a lot of weird ones.
Yeah, I think like did you read the Grimm's stories when you were young?
I did.
Yeah, I didn't read them until probably middle school or high school. And then I've never read them cover to cover. Because, you know, I don't know. I haven't had that discipline.
Yeah. I think it's like with like fairy tales in general, it's like something like pick and choose, like a little morsel. Like, I know, like I had a copy of Aesop's Fables when I was a kid, and I never mm-hmm. like read that cover to cover. Like, I'm really interested in this. Mm-hmm. You know?
As an adult, I love Puss in Boots.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I think it's that book you recommended to me, the one that is the retelling of the fairy tales.
Oh, The Bloody Chamber by Angela Carter.
Yes.
Check this book out.
Her
it's so
version
fantastic.
Of Puss in Boots is incredible. And it has one of the best endings I've ever read of any story.
No, yes. Her retelling of Puss in Boots is fantastic. Angela Carter in general. My personal favorite from that one is The Lady in the House of Love, her retelling of Sleeping Beauty after middle of World War One, end of like, oh man. Y'all, like, seriously, if you're into fairy tales and stuff like that, like, you gotta check out Angela Carter. She's
yes.
fantastic.
So good. So good.
So.
Okay.
On the same vein of being a child and having whimsy and blindly, you know, trusting adults around us. I'm so happy you're alive, by the way. It's not just your birthday, but also like I'm glad that
a celebration that I made it this far.
Not saying that you're such a bright-eyed innocent, but I'm happy you're here. So what was your favorite nursery rhyme? I know that's a weird thing to ask, because like even when I was typing this question, I was like, did I even have a favorite nursery rhyme when I was a kid? And
well, okay, so I did, and this is kind of weird, and it's going to take some explanation.
That's why we're here.
But I liked Jack Sprat.
As in Jack Sprat could eat no fat, his wife could eat no lean.
Yes.
And I think something, 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 it rhymes with clean.
Yes. So between the both, you see, they licked the platters clean.
Okay.
And I think the reason why I liked that is because... like strange connection, right? My grandmother, mom, we called her, she would always say a clean plate is a happy plate every time she would set the food out before us. And I, like, she was the only person that I ever remember her making me finish whatever was on my plate. Mm-hmm. And but I liked that she said that because it made it a game. So I imagine, and this is like me again, like explaining away what adults say without really understanding the figurative language behind it, which I was called, if you ask my aunts and people and everyone, they said I was a very literal child. But I thought that she said a clean plate is a happy plate because you look at when you're finished and you've gotten everything off the plate, you look in and you see your happy reflection because you really enjoyed your food. And so like that nursery rhyme always made me think of eating with my grandparents.
That's really cute though. That's really cute. Your aunt never put anything in front of you on a plate that you didn't like?
My grandmother?
Grandmother.
Well, I mean, everyone put things on plates that I didn't like. I hated canned green beans.
You know what? I'm kind of weird. I love those.
Yeah. I never liked them. And it's funny because I don't think my mom did either, but she still would put them on our plate.
So you come from a family of polite, literal people who like weird children's movies and nursery rhymes.
I think
it was
just me that was so literal.
No, you know what? I think being a literal child is important though, especially like when you, as an adult, you look back at these absurd tales, these absurd nursery rhymes, these extremely absurd movies. And it means that like, wow, I was a literal child and I just took things as they were. And without the grain of salt that comes with, you know, adulthood. And it's nice to be like, wow, like I was that open to the world. Maybe I'm waxing poetic. So when was the first time you saw this movie?
I saw this movie when it came out. I remember
in 1990.
Yes. I remember when because the Disney Channel was advertising it. Mm-hmm. At least I believe that's my memory of it. But they were pushing it really hard. I remember the thing that really stands out to me, like while they're advertising it, is Howie Mandel is Humpty Dumpty and how disturbing that was.
And that one holds up.
Yeah. And I remember like this is something I was like, I need to watch this movie. I really dig it. I mean, Shelley Duvall was one of the first three actors that I ever knew the name of. So I was really excited to see her in something that she did other than fairy tale theater. And plus, I liked nursery rhymes and I was really fascinated with the world building out of just nursery rhymes.
Okay. What do you mean by the world building out of? Oh, yes. I get what you're saying. Like the world of rock and rhyme.
Yes.
Being built out of those. Was there anything like particular in the advertisements that you were like, that like drew you? Not Howie Mandel, because he is very terrifying in this movie, but like, is there like one particular image that you were just like?
Probably the colors.
Yeah.
Because the colors were very vibrant and cartoon-like. And at that time, like I mostly watched animated things.
Yeah.
My sister matured beyond that much faster than I did. I mean, I still love animation. So.
I mean, yeah. I have it like. Yeah, I've got a cartoon tattoo, so yeah. I get you. So when was the last time you saw this movie?
Recently.
Recently. Yeah, I had... Girl. So this is something really cool we can talk about. This movie is kind of why the podcast started in the first place. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about that?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, we were thinking about like what kind of podcast we could make. And I love the movies that we watched when we were kids, and we were talking about it. And I mentioned, we were talking about weird movies that we remembered. And I mentioned this one because it is bizarre. It is very strange.
I remember watching the trailer with you and being like, how have I never seen this movie?
Mm-hmm. Because of it has a star-studded cast.
We'll get there. It's, y'all, that time machine is just buzzing to go.
Yeah.
No, I think that was really cool that, like this movie to me, when you started doing like really pushing this podcast into motion, was like the catalyst. Like, I feel like this is like a really great like victory lap for you, because it's like we started out like talking about this and you're like, I want to do this movie. And you're like, well, I got to do this. And I got to build a backlog. So it's like your victory lap. Victory lap. You know, I think that's so cool. So I got two more questions for you, and then I can smell pizza steam coming off the time machine, which means it's almost time to go back to 1990.
Woo-hoo.
All right. So, speaking of pizza, what was your favorite food trend in the 90s?
Ooh, food trend. Ooh, now I'm going to have to recall all of the 90s commercials that always play in my brain, because like I had to memorize nursery rhymes. I had to memorize jingles and TV opening themes. So...
yeah, I get that.
I would have to say probably pizza bagel bites, because pizza in the morning, pizza in the evening, pizza at supper time.
Yeah. I was always a big fan of what was it? Dunkaroos.
Dunkaroos.
I loved Dunkaroos when I was a kid.
I remember eating those for snack when I got home from school.
Dude, Dunkaroos and just Ritz crackers and just like spreadable cheese. I know you can get those things still, but like I can't eat them anymore because of all my allergies. And so like there are some days where I'm like, man, I want to get off work and just have some spray cheese, Ritz cracker. So on top of that, what was your favorite fashion trend of in the 1990s? There's so many good ones, and they're all back, baby.
Yeah, I mean,
praise, mwah, love ya.
That's a hard one for thanks, me Bogue. To answer from a child perspective, because I was completely oblivious to fashion at that.
You didn't have like a favorite shirt.
I had
a pair of pants. Favorite hairdo.
A favorite. Okay, so I had a T-shirt that was I've forgotten what the name of it is. So maybe you do. But it was one of those temperature sensitive shirts. So it changed so colors cool. when you like put ice over it or you sweated through it. And I loved that shirt, and it was way too big for me because that was the style then.
110%.
And then the only other article of clothing that I remember distinctly, because I was really proud of it, even though I barely ever wore it, and it seems so out of character for me, which is, I think that's why it sticks in my head. But when I was in third grade, I got a 90s power suit, like a woman's power suit made for a third grader. And it was Celadon colored, which is like this, you know, faded green color, like verdigris. Like verdigris, but all of the vibrance sucked out, like it was the desiccated version of verdigris, Celadon. And I think I took my third grade picture in it.
Why have I never, I have been your friend for almost 10 years, Bailey, more, and I have never seen this picture, and I am viscerally upset right now.
I'll see if I can find
upset.
It.
Because like, I can just like, see you walking into school with your little curly hair, and it's like, sisters,
oh, my hair wasn't
curly doing
then.
It for them. Just let me have this, okay?
Okay?
You're going to third grade, it's elementary school, sisters doing it for themselves are blasting in the background, and you got your power suit on, you're like, I'm gonna take
I was
this
like,
fucking
I'm
picture
an adult.
Today.
I'm an adult.
That is the best thing I've heard. That is so good. That's not what I was expecting. I was expecting because I had a shirt from like Smithsonian magazine that my grandparents got me with like different kinds of bugs on it, And so that's what I was like expecting. I just wasn't expecting.
Because I love bugs.
I know. I was like, it's going to be a dinosaur shirt. Like, I feel it. And you're like, fuck you. I got the cerulean business suit tailored for my ass. Like, what the fuck, Bailey? This is the best thing I've ever. Y'all, I'm going to need a moment. Bailey, you need to get into the time machine.
It had checkered lapels.
Shut the fuck up. No, it did not. It did not. I am, y'all.
Yeah, I was proud of it.
Honestly, I feel like this is one of those things that I should say this so I can also peer pressure you, but you should follow Memory Static on Instagram and maybe Bailey will post this picture of her in this business suit.
Oh, also, we've never said this before, but there are original songs at the end of every episode, so
that has nothing to do with that business suit, but it's also very important.
Yes. It just reminded me I meant to say that.
Bailey and her brother, Cullen.
Yes.
Write them, but it has nothing to do with that business suit. No, so
no,
follow
doesn't.
Us on Instagram and on Facebook, and maybe we can peer pressure Bailey all together to see this friggin' suit. All right. I think the time machine is cooking. Let's go. Pew, pew.
All right.
All right. So... there is a lot of information about this movie.
I am so excited. I mean, I will pretend like I know none of it.
You know some none of it. Some none of it.
That is accurate.
Some none of it is my new fixin' to, y'all. Anyway, so Rock and Rhyme was directed by Jeff Stein.
Oh, and who is that?
Okay, Aaron? So you hear her voice right now, y'all. It's because she already did some damn research on this and then was like, Aaron, you want to co-host? And I was like, fine. Guess what I have in my hands, everybody? 5 pages of research. Don't mess with a Virgo. Okay, so you know Jeff Stein.
No, I don't.
As Sagittarians. Anyway, I have two in the room. Help me, everybody. Anyway, Jeff Stein... is best known for being a music video director in the 80s. So you think. But Ooh. Do you know what Jeff Stein is actually the most famous for?
What
he started out his fame career is he's actually the director of the classic rock documentary, The Kids Are All Right, about The Who. So I found out the backstory about how Jeff Stein became the director of this. And this is actually one of the most punk rock ass things.
I am so excited. I don't know this.
I know. Thank God, right? Thank God I did my research, huh, Bailey?
I knew none of it.
So Jeff Stein had no previous film experience or directing experience prior to doing The Kids Are All Right.
Okay.
At 17 years old, he was literally like following The Who and other rock groups around, taking pictures of them, and he like self-published and composed his own photography book about The Who. And by some way or another, because it was like 1975, is able to approach like Pete Townsend.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, and that's a big fucking deal.
Wow.
This is like some almost famous shit, and it's very, very real. And at like 17, 18 years old, is like, I want to make you a documentary about your band, and convinces Pete Townsend of this feat. Okay.
Oh, my God.
This is how he got this career. No film experience, no directing experience. And like when you think about the absolute gravity of that and what he was able to produce after this, that is insane.
That's incredible.
That's so punk rock to me. Like, and then so Pete Townsend goes to his director because like The Who's like all burned out on touring. And he's like, this film could do the touring for us. And so they like all signed on and agree. So Jeff Stein spent the next 2 years collecting rare footage, found footage, photography, shooting the band himself, and compiled like one of the most famous rock documentaries of all time. And he was like pushing 21, 22.
That is amazing.
It is so cool to me. So what's kind of like... also a really cool fact about this is John Entwistle, the bassist of The Who, like did all the sound engineering for the film, which is actually kind of nuts too. So Jeff Stein is really hard to research, and I know you know this.
Yes.
But the lovely land beyond this time machine does not. Jeff Stein is actually really hard to look up because he's a recluse, and it doesn't seem like it's by choice. after he doesn't have a Wikipedia page, his IMDb page shows nothing. I found a music video database, and he showed up on that. Finally, after like I found an article written for The Pitch in Kansas City, and they found him a couple years ago, and he was like, yeah, I want to talk about me for a second. And it sounds like he's just like a recluse, not really by choice, but by proxy. He said, in his own words, he's reemerging from 25 years of therapy. He sounds like a pretty dramatic dude, but when you watch his stuff, you're like, yeah, this guy brings the drama. It seems like the last time he did any kind of working or directing or writing was in 2007. So this guy must have partied a lot because in the 80s alone, and these are confirmed, by the way, music videos that he directed, Closer to Me, The Outfield, Cherry Pie by Warrant, Cherry Pie's terrible cover of We Will Rock You. Don't even at me. It's terrible. You Are the Girl, The Cars, These Dreams by Heart, which rewatching that music video the other day, I was like, damn, this is some sick stuff. Tonight She Comes, The Cars, Don't Come Around Here No More, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Rebel Yell, Billy Idol. And that music video in particular is the least weird out of any of these music videos that he directed, because it's just like Billy Idol having a concert.
And this was all at the beginnings of MTV.
We're
right?
Going to get there.
Okay.
So, Dynamite, Jermaine Jackson. And that one features a prison break and break dancing and black lights. And my personal favorite off this list, next to Tom Petty, because Tom Petty's my dude forever, Torture by the Jacksons, when the Jacksons were all still a group together before Michael had a solo career. This music video is like Parliament and Clive Barker did a music video with special effects by Cronenberg.
Oh, I need to see this music video.
And it is the sickest music video. And it almost clocks in at 7 minutes long. It is a long-ass music video.
Wowie.
For that time period before, and it's like, that music video was released pre-Thriller. So like you can imagine like having like these long ass songs and like without any storyline, like that was like completely new. So couple things. We're going to talk about music videos for a second because Rock and Rhyme is kind of a music video.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably more videos in the 10 that I'm listing right now. It's not only because Jeff Stein is like kind of a recluse. It's also because like in the 80s, a lot of that information wasn't written down and it wasn't designated. And a lot of people were trading music videos for work and music videos for favors. Like, you know, the story about Lost Boys, how they had that sick soundtrack in Lost Boys is because the director like approached all like the musicians and they were he was like, hey, I can't buy the rights to your music, but if you give me them, I'll make you a sick music video.
Oh, wow.
That's how Lost Boys has a soundtrack that does. So wow. It's really hard to kind of chart.
So it's just like a trade thing.
Exactly. And it's really, really, really interesting. Some sites like...
Music videos were so new.
So new. And, you know, some of them, like some of the sites I looked him up on say that he did the Out of Touch, Out of Time music video by Hall & Oates, but it's not confirmed.
Oh.
So it's really hard to like see like what exactly Jeff Stein did, but the 10 music videos that I listed for sure were Jeff Stein. His aesthetic is very green screen, space, lots of loaded sexual imagery.
Fog machines.
I honestly like watching these music videos and then watching Rock and Rhyme, I was like, I cannot tell if he just did a lot of cocaine in the 80s or if he's just like a surreal genius. Like watching his stuff, like I think he's a genius in a lot of ways.
They're really cool music videos.
So cool. Speaking of which, we're going to talk about the coolest one.
All right.
So.
And this one directly relates to.
We're going to get there.
Oh, okay.
Bailey's trying to lead me, but I got the reins of this time machine, everybody.
It's so hard.
It's really notable here. We're going to do a sidebar for a second. This whole movie was made in 1990. And music videos were extremely new because in 1980, Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles had just come out. And that is officially the first music video in our like culture.
Cool.
So music videos were only 10 years old when Rock and Rhyme was made, which is why it's erratic and it's choppy And you can tell that Jeff Stein's like trying to like kind of gain his balance through it. And he's also just trying to find where to make a storyline happen and where to like let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Stein was like following art trends a lot in his music video, because if you watch like music videos from the Talking Heads and all these other cats, they're extremely like art based. And so he's following these trends, but he also has this like very trademark thing, and you'll see it in Rock and Rhyme, where he like skews perception. He's really into screwing perception.
And then use fish eye a lot.
He uses fish eye. He actually built sets to like make people look smaller. He actually physically
that is
wanted
super cool.
And you'll see that in Rock and Rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, this is why it's like kind of sad that like Rock and Rhyme wasn't as successful as it was, because if it had been executed correctly, which we'll get to, like this could have been like a tantamount cult classic and also very well revered in the music community. It didn't, because yeah. It's not that smart, but it's so weird and beautiful. So the music video we're going to talk about is Don't Come Around Here No More, mm-hmm. by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers from his album Southern Accents. And yes. What do you remember anything in particular about this music video before I like launch into every single fact into God's humanity?
Well, I remember the black and white checkered everything, mm-hmm. And also how disturbing it is when they all eat Alice.
Yeah, they eat Alice. You know, what's funny is that woman's from Houston.
Oh,
yeah, her she has a weird.
That's
name.
Where I grew up.
Yeah, no, she's from Houston. Her middle name's like Wind or something like that. Louise Wish Foley is from Houston, and apparently now she's like a house mom and stuff. Like she was just like, and she even said she was like, yeah, Tom was like a really nice guy. She's like, I worked on a couple of music videos prior, and a lot of the dudes are like really narcissists, and she was like, he was a Southern gentleman, which is why it's so weird that he got so much flack, because at the end of the music video, Alice is turned into a cake. So for those of you who have never seen Don't Come Around Here No More, like please pause this podcast for a second and go watch this music video, because it's brilliant. I think it's brilliant.
It's really cool.
It's really cool. Well, so the video was made in 1985, and you can tell like the idea of it stuck with Stein, because the set in the music video is almost exactly the same as King Cole's.
Yes. So there is a scene in Mother Goose Rock and Rhyme where old King Cole is introduced, and he has all of his court present, and he plays the piano.
Mm-hmm.
Played by Little Richard.
Yeah, we're going to get there.
Oh, my goodness.
Bailey wants to like really take the wheel on here.
I just want to participate.
I know. You're almost there. You're almost there. But like, this video is super brilliant because it's one of the first videos of its time where it took a storyline and it took the idea of a song and made them made them a similar narrative. Because if you listen to the lyrics of Don't Come Around Here No More, it's a song about someone being like, you're not in my life anymore, I don't want you here. But like the Mad Hatter's amusement at like Alice like doing this, like coming back and back is great. So Jeff Stein like really did show his like emotional like arm, mm-hmm. in this music video, and it won like several MTV awards, et cetera, et cetera. It's a great music video. There are flamingos used to play cellos. Alice gets turned into a cake. Tom Petty is the Mad Hatter. Teacups get eaten. Perceptions are skewed, and like this music video really, really heavily influenced Stein. And also Southern Accents. You should really check out this album. It's one of my favorite of Petty's. So we're going to move on to Shelley Duvall.
I love Shelley Duvall. I love her.
You know that she's also from Texas?
Only because you told me the other day.
She is from Houston as well. And that's actually how she was discovered, was like at a party in Houston.
Wow.
Her nickname was the Texas Twiggy, which I'm also starting a band called the Texas Twiggy.
Oh, that's good.
So her first movie was Brewster McCloud, which a lot of people in our generation wouldn't really know about. She was in Nashville, which is a great movie. Popeye, which I know we've talked about Popeye. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. Harry Nilsson did the soundtrack. Actually, the guy who helped compose and play in this movie, Van Dyke Parks, is another arranger and composer for that soundtrack, but she's really great. She did a cameo in Annie Hall. She won Best Actress in 77 for Three Women at Cannes. And she's done Time Bandits, Freakin' Weenie. Like, she did a, this is really cool. She did a voice for one of the cartoons. I tried to find a picture of it because I was like, I remember this name, but I don't remember the character.
Which cartoon?
Real Monsters, which is my favorite. I'm literally wearing this hat right
now.
But I think she might have been related to Oblina because her name, the voice she acted in it was for Akra.
Akra.
So if anyone knows this character, like, please, like, let us, I looked this up so diligently. Like, I'm holding like 6 pages of research right now. I couldn't find a picture of this character and I'm very sad, but she was on All Real Monsters.
That's,
which is
so
cool.
She
co-starred in one of my favorite movies of all time, Roxanne.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. She's in Roxanne. I totally forgot
about
that.
I forgot that she was in that movie.
Right. So we're going to talk a little bit here and there about Shelley Duvall, but
who plays Bo Peep in the movie?
Who plays Bo Peep in the movie? She's also in the title of the movie.
Yeah, but that just could mean that she's a producer.
So, you know, she was the executive producer of this movie, but she had like a lot of connections. Let's just say that. Anyway, so a lot of people know Duvall from her huge role as Wendy Torrance in The Shining, co-starring Jack Nicholson and directed by Stanley Kubrick. Don't want to, like, there are so many things about The Shining. You can look them up. One of the things I like to mention to people is that the baseball bat scene in The Shining took 127 takes.
Jesus, she must have been so tired.
No, like, so the hysterics you see in that
scene are real.
Jeez. Like, Stanley Kubrick purposely pushed her to
so
that limit.
Mean.
No, oh no. Stanley Kubrick really screwed Shelley Duvall up, and she's still alive. She lives in Texas still, actually. She moved from LA to Texas, and I really hope she's okay because she's just a sweetheart. And, like, I read this article about her for this podcast from the New York Times in the time period when she had just started Fairy Tale Theater. And the
talk about something from our childhood.
Right?
I mean, that's probably how I knew her name.
Yeah.
Was Fairy Tale Theater.
Same. And, well, next to Popeye.
Yeah, Popeye too.
But, like, the New York Times article was like, yeah, Shelley Duvall, she's all innocent and bright-eyed, and then she, like, lights a cigarette and sits down at her desk, and you're like, you know, this woman means business. And, like, I was just like,
she's
yeah.
So cool.
She's so cool, right? So, what's really interesting about Popeye is that it really influenced her career because she met Robin Williams, who she got along with really well. And you can see that on the movie screen with them, like, and all of their songs together. It's just such a good movie. But she showed Robin Williams her book collection of fairy tales and nursery rhymes that she'd been collecting since she was 17 years old. And she read him this particular version of The Frog Prince that she really liked. And he, like, was really attached to it. Uh-huh. And one of the first episodes of Fairy Tale Theater features Robin Williams as the Frog Prince.
That is so cool.
Isn't that so cool?
I love that so much. She probably made friends very easily.
You know what? I really think she did because, like, I'm going to read you. I'm going to get in front of the mic, too, while I do it. Eric just gave me a sassy look. So, interesting things about Fairy Tale Theater. It was hosted, produced, and sometimes acted by Duvall, which
yes,
you know.
Yes, she's in the Rumpelstiltskin.
She's
in the Rumpelstiltskin episode. I remember that.
So, it aired on Showtime from 82 to 87. It's one of the first examples of original programming for cable television next to HBO's Fraggle Rock.
Wow.
I didn't even
realize that Fraggle Rock was made for HBO.
No, I had no idea either. Like, when I read that, I did, like, some cross-referencing. I was like, holy crap. Like, this is insane. So it was followed. Fairy Tale Theater was followed by two less popular series, Telltales and Legends.
Okay.
And something that I'm like, I want to find this and I want to watch it because I've never seen it. Nightmare Classics.
Ooh.
Right up the alley, right?
Nightmare Classics.
These were both produced. Both of those were also produced by Duvall. So famous accolades in all three of those series includes, but not limited to, Laura Dern, Danny Glover, Molly Ringwald, Tom Hulce, Martin Short, Rob Reiner, Carol Kane, Steve Guttenberg, Jamie Lee Curtis, who played Annie freaking Oakley, Beverly D'Angelo, Robin Williams, Eric Idle, Bud Cort from Harold and Maude, Ione Skye, Angelica Houston, James Earl Jones, Terry Garr, who was also
in Mother Goose Rockin' Rhyme.
Yeah, Howie Mandel.
Mother Goose Rockin' Rhyme.
Jeff Bridges, Sofia Coppola, Mick friggin' Jagger, Malcolm McDowell, Carrie freaking Fisher, Joan Collins, Gregory Peters, Bernadette Peters, my girl, Liza fucking Minnelli. I'm sorry, y'all. Susan Sarandon, Matthew Broderick, Bren Vereen, also
Mother Goose Rockin' Rhyme.
Jim Belushi, Christopher Reeves, Carole King, John Lithgow, fun note, Lithgow and Vereen played Barney Stinson's fathers in How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Lorraine Newman from SNL, Billy Crystal, and to top this all off, the cherry on this weirdo celebrity A-list pile, Frank Zappa.
Holy crap. What a list. And I bet they wouldn't have done it if they hadn't have loved her.
Exactly. And also, Frank Zappa's son, Dweezil Zappa, has a small role in Rock and Rhyme.
Oh my gosh, I didn't realize that.
So here's my conclusion. Shelley Duvall is genuinely a sweetheart.
And everyone loved her. And probably would have done anything for her.
100%. And also that fairy tale theater was essentially the Law and Order of fantasy.
Yes. And so so she had this idea.
Yeah, she knows everybody. And the series, you remember, it's so special because these reenactments, they're kind of corny. They're kind of cornball-y, but you can tell that they're directed and they're produced in such a way the person really cared about them. Shelley Duvall cared about this so much. I genuinely, like, I mean, and if you agree with me on this, please let me know. But I think that, like, Duvall's essence and, like, essential marketability is the fact that she remained really in vain with innocence. You know, just like her face and
yes,
everything.
The way she speaks.
Yeah, she's beautiful. Yes. So we're going to get to Rock and Rhyme. So there are reasons why I kind of like did some more research on movies and our music videos.
It all relates because it all meshes together.
There's that, and that's a very nice way of putting it. There's also the other way of putting it, where there are absolutely no fucking things about this movie. Like, yeah. Like I found the article from Consequence of Sound. I found a BuzzFeed article being like, check out this weirdo movie, and then like IMDb and like a Wikipedia page, and that's it.
Yeah, there's not a lot written about it.
And I think that's
especially for something that was pushed so hard by the Disney Channel.
I think this is a real shame because, like, knowing the story about Jeff Stein and Shelley Duvall, they must have met somewhere along the way and had this brilliant idea to make a music video for children and have a storyline to it. Like, if they had executed this correctly, it would have been a fucking masterpiece.
Yeah. It just needs more music.
Yeah, because there are only three songs in the movie, which is really, really weird. And we're going to get to this.
With the cast full.
Okay. I did this research. I did it. Me. So, released in 1990. And the songs only have three movies. The movie only has three songs. Which is really weird because this is the cast. Bobby Brown, Cyndi Lauper, Debbie Harry, Little Richard, Paul Simon, and Art Garfunkel, and they're both filmed in different scenes because this is in the middle of their feud. Stray Cats, Ben Vereen, Howie Mandel, Cheech Marin, Kathy Siegel, who's like in like the weird long one, and ZZ Top. Also co-stars are Gene Stapleton, Pia Sidora, Terry Garr, and Woody freaking Harrelson.
Yeah.
Like, this is a star-studded cast.
It's wild.
There's, like, this is nothing to shake a stick at. And, like, there are two different versions of it.
Yes. I didn't realize this until I was looking up on YouTube, which is where you can watch it, is on YouTube. And I think there's, like, some low-quality DVDs you can buy.
VHS of this on Amazon is $162.
Yeah, I don't... Yeah. What we're going to be watching tonight is a rip from our VHS that we recorded off the television. But... Sick. Or what everybody's watching out there. And... sorry, confusion with the time machine. Yeah, so like on YouTube, if you look up, if you look it up on YouTube, there are two versions. There's a long version, there's a shorter version. Totally watch the shorter version unless you're like really nerding out over it.
Yeah, I will second this. Watch the shorter version. It's quite a bit. So beyond being able to see that there's a star-studded cast and doing like research into both Jeff Stein and Shelley Duvall, a lot of trails end up empty. And I did find, however, a behind-the-scenes video made by Disney for the VHS release of this movie. It's very fun. It's like 4 minutes long. What I've learned from this is there were 32 sets for this movie. That's insane. Like, that is insane. Especially like when you watch the movie, it's very Pee-wee's Playhouse. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of the furniture, as I said, was built like Jeff Stein's movies, where like there were like tinier.
Off kilter.
Yeah, off kilter. There were chairs that would make you look smaller than you were or bigger than you were. And that's like insane. There were 47 speaking roles. And I was like, I should rewatch this movie and see how many people are talking. And I was like, nope, can't do that one. But yeah, 47 speaking roles.
That's insane. That's so crazy.
Isn't that nuts?
There should have been one for every set. Or every speaking role.
They're pretty much like, I mean, they're only a handful away. Just shove it at them. That's almost 50 speaking roles. It was Duvall's first feature with Disney, which is kind of nuts. Howie Mandel's daughter came to visit him on set, and she was too afraid to approach him.
Oh, because he's terrifying.
And they had to show her the back of the egg costume because he's Humpty Dumpty, so she would go up and approach her dad. And they actually have footage of like Howie Mandel being like, "Hey, it's okay, kid." Like approaching. If I were a kid, I'm even as an adult, I'm like, "Don't you dare!"
That should have been a warning.
Honestly, it should have been a freaking warning. And that is when Aaron lost her notes. Great. Well, I remember you mentioning when you were a kid, you loved the Del Rubio triplets. Can you tell me why about that?
Oh, actually, my love for the Del Rubio triplets is something that has blossomed as I've gotten older and realized who they were. But I just think they are amazing. They were an old vaudeville act, if I remember correctly. And they really gained their popularity in the 90s, appearing on all sorts of TV shows, singing with guitars, with bathing suits on, basically.
Yeah. So, some things about the Del Rubio triplets. They don't have any songs on Spotify.
I know, that's such a travesty.
I'm really fucking outraged because I made not only a music video playlist for the party tonight, but I made a Spotify playlist featuring not only every single artist that Jeff Stein did a music video for, but every single musical recording artist that's featured in this movie, even though they don't sing. And honestly, who has Bobby Brown in a movie and he doesn't sing? I'm insulted by this movie sometimes. I love it, but I'm insulted. So Spotify, if you ever listen to this, which you won't, maybe, I don't know, give me a call, put Del Rubio triplets on. They started in 1940 as club singers. They hit their heyday in like the 50s by starring on, like, they did a couple of numbers on Bob Hope. They're born as the Boyd triplets. Their names are Edith, Elena, and Mildred. And they were born the 23rd of August in 1921. And they were born in Panama, in the Panama Canal Zone. They grew up there in Washington, D.C., and they changed their stage name to Rubio because they would dye their hair blonde, and Rubio is blonde in Spanish.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. Their biggest hit was they're doing a cover, and they don't really have hits. Like, they weren't like other musical groups, but their biggest hit was like them doing a cover of like Devo's Whip It.
I bet it's amazing.
Look at the videos. They're really, really just, you'll be charmed. They're just charming. Those television appearances you were talking about, got a list of them. They were on Married with Children as Peggy's aunts.
Wow.
Which is really great because, fun fact, Kathy Siegel was also in this longer version of Rock and Rhyme. They were on Full House, Golden Girls, Night Court, Hanging with Mr. Cooper, New Monkeys, Ellen, and Pee-wee's Playhouse.
The Christmas special.
They were also on regular episodes of Pee-wee's Playhouse too, though.
Oh, that is so cool.
But their Christmas special is their most well known for doing their Winter Wonderland, right. Which 'tis the season, y'all. Let's do this. And
They are all passed away now, and I think this is really sweet, but they're all buried together.
Oh.
So they're singing to eternity.
They sing one of the only three songs in the movie.
Oh, yep. Hop to it. Don't be late.
Hop to it.
Something, something. And
make it a date.
Make it a date. She knows all the words better than I do. Hey, what's your favorite song in this movie out of the three songs?
Oh, well, let's see. So there's that
Shake
one.
A stick at one of
there's,
them.
There's Little Richard's song.
Yeah, King Cole song.
And what's the third one? It's I can't think of it right now.
All I can think of is Bobby Brown dancing.
Right, which is not really a song.
It's not a song, and he was robbed.
The Stray Cats sing a song.
Oh, yeah, the Stray Cats.
Stray Cats sing a song. I would probably say the Stray Cats song.
You know what?
But the Hop To It song is the one that always pops into my head in the mornings.
It's so nice. They played it twice in that movie. I think I like the Hop To It song, especially because, like, you're watching it and, like, the Del Rubio triplets and Debbie Harry are dressed very similarly. And so I was, like, watching it and I was like, wait, is that friggin' Debbie Harry? She mm-hmm. is the old lady in the shoe.
Yes, so she's not old at all.
She's not old at all, and it's super funny. And praise be for weird Debbie Harry cameos. Where would us little punk freaks be without her? A couple more facts for you. Little Richard had never worn a pink wig before this movie, according to him.
Oh, how about that?
Anyway.
Well, he looks good.
He looks great in it. Ben Vereen is wearing a cyclist suit designed for him to have mobility while he is doing all of his dancing because he is a world-renowned dancer.
That makes sense.
The dank, which is in my favorite scene in this movie, the dungeon scene.
Gordon, won't you come out? Oh, that's another song.
No. Yeah, that's the third song, isn't it? Because I'm not including the other one, the Stray Cat song, because that wasn't directly, that was like more of a background song. It's the dank. Yeah. So that band is called The Dank, and it's the best song in the movie. It comes out of nowhere.
And this is a sing-along.
And it's a freaking sing-along. And they quote the from Wizard of Oz, mm-hmm. and it's so metal. Anyway.
And it's scary. It scared me when I was a kid.
I don't know about that.
It scared me when I was a kid because they're all wearing masks, and it's like all these weird angles.
And they're like five guitarists. And honestly, can you imagine trying to organize a band practice with that?
Mm. Yeah, scary.
It is scary. It's hard. So the dank is made out of Dweezil Zappa, Randy Jackson, and Warren DeMartini from the band Rat. So they're like legit metalheads and like music nerds in this band. And that's there are so many other things to talk about this movie. The guy who played Gordy was in a band called Breakfast Club, and the original drummer of Breakfast Club was Madonna.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, and like there isn't anything about him either. There are two, like his Wikipedia page was like he was once in this band
and he dated Madonna.
There are some reasons why he's like tied to Shelley Duvall. They think that they dated. Also, Shelley Duvall and Paul Simon dated, which is how he got into this movie. This movie is really incredible.
I love Paul Simon so much.
I mean, he's so cute in the movie, but like this movie is literally a feat of like, what can you do with your friends?
Yeah, I think it was just a whole bunch of friends got together.
Yeah, it's kind of like your podcast, Bailey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
I feel like that is a good note for us to end this on.
Yeah, let's go join the party and see what everybody else thought.
Yeah, friendship. Sorry. It's You know one of the best parts of the... You want to know one of the best parts of 2018 for me? It's been a crap year. This is a highlight for me. I found out this year that if you listen to Sandstorm... if you listen to it on Spotify and you have the Genius app on Spotify... it'll put the lyrics of Sandstorm on it. What? I found this out when I was in New Mexico last, and I laughed so hard I thought I was going to pee my pants. Like, I was like, Thank you. Thank you, technology. That has nothing to do with this podcast, though.
Are we ready?
Are we ready? We're rolling right now.
Okay. Well, we're done with this movie.
I'm just warming up the room, everybody. Tip your bartenders, tip your waitress.
We...
Be here all night.
Well, we finished the movie.
Yeah.
And now we're here with everyone that had just watched it with us.
Yeah.
So, Aaron, you want to take over?
Yeah. I got some questions for y'all. One person at a time. Let's make sure we pass the mics, blah, blah, kind of thing. Anyway, let's say that you are the director of a remake of Rockin' Rhymin' Mother Goose. You have to recast the three blind mice, King Cole, and the Del Rupio triplets. Hop to it. Who do you cast? Okay, y'all, come on.
So I'm going to start with the Del Rubio triplets are Jenny Lewis and the Watson twins. Let's go with, you said the three blind mice?
Yes, Bobby Brown.
Okay.
In the OG, but you're recasting the remake.
Three blind mice, and then the king, who is Little Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hmm. Well, the king is going to be a queen, and it's going to be Beyonce.
Saucy.
And let's see, the three blind mice. Oh boy, that's a tough one. The three.
It can be one person because we. That's the original was just one.
That's true. Oh, Bailey, you got something? Yeah. Okay, come back to me on the three blind mice.
I want to start this off by saying that I'm really bad at this sort of thing, but let's have Dolly Parton as the triplets.
Yes.
And yes, all three of them.
Praise be.
And in the same light, for the three blind mice, we'll have Jermaine Clement. Yes. And for Little Richard, I mean Old King Cole, Little Richard's still around. Let's just bring him back.
That's fair.
Fair enough.
Yeah, reprise that role.
Anybody else got any recasting reimaginations? I think we should try to throw out a goth version of this. Like King Cole is Nick Cave, and the three blind mice, that's Marilyn Manson, and then the Del Rubio triplets, it's just all Trent Reznor's. Right? Who's with me on this? Right? No? Okay. All right, spooky jerks. All right. Who would you cast as Bo Peep? And lame ass Gordon. Cullen?
No.
I'm thinking. I think Paul Rudd would be a good Gordon. Mm.
I agree. That would be a great Gordon.
He's silly and stupid. Why not?
Excellent. I love. What about Bo Peep?
What about Chris Pratt as Gordon?
I could see that
as
too.
Like a less douchey Gordon.
Yeah.
You know, like he learns to not be douchey over the course of the film and then he's really nice. Oh, sorry. That's it. I'm done.
What about Bo Peep?
Bo Peep.
It's hard to replace Shelley Duvall and I understand that. Ooh, I mean
Ellie Kemper.
Someone take the mic and say it into the mic, please.
Bo Peep, Ellie Kemper.
I like that. I like Kempler a lot. Kempler. I think also Zooey Deschanel would be a good.
Oh yeah.
A good casting.
That's good.
Of that.
I asked my sister, and she said Zooey Deschanel as something, some character, and my mom said the same thing without even talking to her.
Y'all's families, spookies.
Are we supposed to do like musical artists for these recastings?
It can be any. Well, they're only like what?
It
three
is rock and rhyme. You know?
Yeah.
Anarchy rules. No rules.
You are the director.
Do you guys know Felicia Day? Yeah. That she'd be a good Bo Peep, and she can sing.
Yeah. I like that. Hell yeah. Any other thoughts about the recasting? Okay. I got one more recasting question, then I'll actually go into... I was just curious, you know? Okay, so who would you cast as Mary Had a Little Lamb, Cyndi Lauper, and her lamb, Woody Harrelson?
Terry Crews for the sheep, and instead of being like...
Yes!
The giggle out of Jaime over here.
Yes!
And instead of being like sad and fat, he's super fit, but like actually acts like a sheep, like timid.
I really love this. I will produce whatever Aaron Brothers Rock and Rhyme and Mother Goose. I'm into this. Let's go. Let's make this. Oh my God. I don't know if we can top that.
Actually, can we piggyback on that, since we got Terry Crews as the sheep, can we have Isaiah Mustafa as Cyndi Lauper, so that it's like the two guys from the Old Spice commercials?
True.
He's the old other guy who's like, I'm on a horse, you know, like Isaiah Mustafa. Both of them.
I love it. Okay, we're done. All right. Next question is, so were you lame? How were you lame as a kid? And I'm not talking about like cutesy tootsy, like, I used to shop at Hot Topic. I was so lame. Like, kind of lame. I'm talking about like, how were you like a sourpuss or a fuddy-duddy, a jerk when you were a kid? Like, do you have like any stories that come to mind where you're like, man, I was a real butthole? Like a Gordy. How were you a Gordy? Gordy Goose. You never really learned to play. We learned that in the sing-along. Anybody?
I have...
It's a big one. It's a big existential question right there.
I have a lot of stories in this area, but I don't know if I can put them into words without being utterly overcome with shame.
Glad I'm bringing this to the table.
For the internet.
Awesome, thank you.
I'll come back to you, Kellen. So how was I lame as a child?
Yeah, how were you lame?
This is mostly in elementary school, but it took me a while to like learn interpersonal cues and understand people's like unsaid meaning, which apparently most people learn pretty young. And so in elementary school, I was like happy-go-lucky and like ignorant of like anything that wasn't involving me. Apparently I was being bullied because I didn't understand the dynamics of being bullied. Got put in a class that was supposed to help me like learn these cues, and it was called How to Make Friends.
Oh my God.
And I would get called to the counselor's office for that class like twice a week over the intercom. So that was
over the intercom.
That was super helpful.
How many people were in this class?
There were like five little people, children in this like kind of crowded room that barely fit a table, and there were stuffed animals like all over the walls, like shelves of them. It was just my elementary school counselor's office, like the back room in her office.
Dang. Yeah.
No, we were fine though.
I bet you were completely fine.
Okay.
Did you make any friends?
As I learned in the sixth grade, as everyone moved to middle school, no.
Aww.
It's okay. I have friends now.
Yeah. I mean, that's honestly all that matters.
I can use the story to make friends.
Truth. Yeah, middle school sucks, y'all.
No, the other people in that class, like, actually had, like, they were either autistic and undiagnosed, or they, like, kept eating their hair. Those are the two I remember. I was chastised for just like curling my hair with a finger, because little things, I guess, make friends.
Wow. Yeah, thank you for sharing
all
that.
Right. Now no one can do worse than me, so.
I was just gonna say one real quick thing.
As I think about this now, like, I don't know why. I don't like the fact that around sixth grade, I used to wear a Mickey Mouse watch and a rabbit's foot hanging from my belt. That's awful.
We all survived it. We all survived it, y'all. We all survived. We all did things that made us lame.
So this isn't a specific story, but rather, like, looking at Gordon in this movie and seeing what he and my younger self have in common, this is what I've learned.
Oh, let's go for it. We're delving in.
So when I was a child, I didn't have a very good conception of, like, other people's perspectives, I guess. It's difficult to state exactly, but I remember that, like, whenever someone did, I was very easy to offend as a child. You know, it was really, oh, Bailey is just like nodding her head and like refraining from bursting into laughter.
Oh, I don't want to interrupt you.
No, don't go ahead.
I just remember there was one thing, like, and this was when he was very, very young. You know, he would say and do these things that were really funny, and we would like laugh, you know, like, oh, that you're so cute. And he'd get really mad, really, really mad. And he would look at us and say, stop laughing. It's like, but Colin, you're funny. And he said, I am not funny. I am serious, which was such a huge contrast to how I was when I was a child, because I was a serious child and wanted desperately to understand how to be funny.
I just wanted people to take me seriously. So the thing is that, like, that whole thing of me wanting to be taken seriously never really went away as I went through, like, the different age groups. And it was always, like, it was really easy for me to think of these people, like, teachers, peers at school, whatever, doing things that were not fair to me. It was easy for me to perceive those things as unjust. Like, they should have been seeing things from my perspective. If they did, then they'd know that they really hurt me, and that wasn't fair at all. But then looking at, what's his name in the movie? Gordon.
Gordon.
Gordon Goose. Gordon Goose, he also has this insistent need to have his perspective be recognized, you know, like he needs chastises Bo Peep or other people for not agreeing with what he thinks that things should be like. He even says, I'm normal, why can't everyone be like me? Maybe not those words exactly, but you know, that general feeling. So how was I a Gordon in my youth?
Yeah.
I was unable to recognize that it's important to adapt to your surroundings. But
I can grok that. Grok that. So how do you think this movie came into existence? Say into the mic.
Somebody got high. I don't know. And they had a lot of time and a lot of friends.
Yeah. Anyone else? Jaime.
I think she just had Shelley Duvall, right? I think she just had a lot of friends and wanted to make something fun. Honestly, I think this movie's great.
Like, I think this movie's great, too.
I would have showed this to my kids one day.
Like,
it's... It's not. It's I think somebody I heard somebody say it was a bad movie, and I guess it kinda is, but it's just so much. It's so much fun. Like, it's very creative. There's so much creativity going on, and I think she just wanted to make something weird and creative, and a lot of people were in on it, and I love that. So
yeah, me too. Bailey and I were talking about that earlier. It's kind of what Bailey's doing. Except maybe without, like, you know, ZZ Top and a tub.
Yeah, I agree with that. I thought it was really fun. I understand why it's probably a cult classic, or feels like a cult classic. I was gonna say another thing, but I forgot it.
I have a question. Back to you, Aaron. Who
me?
Who is the target audience of this movie?
Well, I mean, this movie was made for the Disney Channel for TV, and so they were really pitching it towards kids. But when we talk about this in the time machine, but there are a couple of theories as to why I think that Shelley Duvall wanted to push this movie. And I think a lot of that had to do with the upsurgence of music videos and the fact that she, like,
loves telling stories of all different kinds. Like, she's a really interesting person in that regard. So I hope that answers your question. You'll have to listen to the podcast to find out more.
I will. I will find out the answer to my question.
So this movie has a lot to do with music. I love a lot of movies because of music. I love a lot of music. But what were songs from movies that you loved as a child?
So obviously, straight out the gate, I got to throw it to Eye to Eye by Powerline. Yeah, from Disney's A Goofy Movie.
Do you know the words to that song still?
Yeah, I do.
I think we listened to that song maybe like 5 times a year together.
That's a song that I will regularly sneak into party playlists, like just right when it's really kicking off, you know, like Return of the Mac has probably played pretty soon before, and then it's like, all right, people are going, and then it's like, I got myself in motion. And then it's like, oh, wait, this is Disney Channel. Yeah.
Eric, you're my boy.
Okay, stop me when y'all know what this is. Turn around. Look at what you see. Never ending story. Yes. Nobody joined in.
Sorry, we were just enjoying y'all singing together.
Actually, there's a good punk version of that too. Actually, with the O's and everything. I think some of mine when I was a kid, I always loved "Stand By Me." Honestly, after seeing, you know, but I remember a song that I didn't want to tell anybody that I liked when I was a kid. Of maybe that awkward feeling too when you are a kid is a. That song from Top Gun that Every Breath You Take.
No.
Doom, boo,
take
doo,
my
doom.
Breath away.
Take my breath. Yeah, take yeah. my breath away. I remember I'd hear that in the car and I didn't want to tell anybody I liked it because, you know, thought it was too cool. But I always remember that one really affected me. And what Eric was saying earlier before when we were sitting outside is video game songs. There are so many like things that are planted in my memory forever from just listening to 80s composers from Japan writing stuff, you know. And it looks like Eric wants the mic back now.
No, you can keep the mic. That's cool. I was going to say another one from movies that I didn't actually see this movie when I was a child, but I saw it much later, and it is made before I was born, is the movie Streets of Fire. By Walter Hill has some really great musical numbers in it. It's like a really unsung musical. There's so many good ones. I highly recommend checking it out.
I liked what's it called? Highlander, Queen. Oh. We are immortal. Yes. You know what else? What is it? Who wants to live forever? I don't know. I can't sing as well as you do.
Go on, Bailey. Sing Freddie Mercury.
Yeah. Yes. Please. Who wants to live forever?
Or we are immortal.
Either
one. And at the end of next podcast, yeah.
Waiting for that album drop. Go on, Jaime.
What's that? Newsies? Y'all remember Newsies?
Yeah, dude.
Santa Fe? Christian Bale singing.
Oh yeah,
I love that song.
That's a sick one. Newsies is dope. Anybody else? We all have like a song from a movie that we love from when we were kids.
I have too many because that's where I feel like movies have changed my childhood of the nostalgia of it. One of my other favorite ones that I have to say is Vacation. I just love that
Oh, Holiday
movie,
Road.
Because that whole soundtrack is
how does that
Holiday
go again,
Road. And then at the very end, I remember I told my brother even, I was like, at my funeral, you have to play that last song on Vacation. And we went dancing across the USA. I don't know if anybody knows that one. That's all Lindsey Buckingham, too, who played in Fleetwood Mac. And that's
100%.
His solo 100%. Stuff. And that's still, I love it to death. Anybody else?
All right. So every year... around this time of year, I would just totally jam out to the soundtrack to Home Alone. that one version of White Christmas with like the and I
I am dreaming of a white.
That one is.
I just want to say, like, it's so obvious that we're siblings, because, like, it's just like, I don't know. When I was in college, I asked my mom asked me what I wanted for Christmas, and I said I wanted the soundtrack to Home Alone, and she looked at me like I was crazy. She's like, "Why would you want that?" And then last year, I bought the vinyl of it from Mondo Tees. And I brought it home for Christmas, and everyone loved it. So there.
Well, looks like we're going to be wrapping up right here, Miss Bailey.
Oh, okay. I'm here.
So what did you think about being able to watch this movie with all your friends on your birthday?
It was so much more fun to watch with a group of people, I have to say. And like when we got to the inexplicable sing-along section,
best part of the movie, hands
I
down.
Loved that everyone was all in and started singing it and like doing their best to follow that bouncing ball, even though like nobody really knew where it was going.
No one knew.
I was gonna say, I think that was like the intro to Gordon being like taught how to have fun, so he had to sing along with them or something. It was
absolutely
teaching us how to have fun too.
I like that. Oh my gosh, let's call it back to the first episode.
Well, actually, oh, sorry, Bailey, what were you gonna say?
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, I like that King Cole's punishment is really like to put you in the dungeon until you learn how to enjoy yourself.
Honestly, yeah. That sounds like hell on earth to me a little bit. So it's your birthday. You've been doing this podcast for over a year now.
Mm-hmm.
You've managed to corral a big group of friends, a la Shelley Duvall, make your dreams come true. What do you have set for yourself for the next year of the podcast and for you?
Oh, like what would be my choice next year?
Yeah.
Well, so here's the thing. I was thinking, like, what if I put out three choices and then we have a poll to see, like, you know, which one do people want to watch? Because I've got several. I have way too many. Do you want a teaser? Or?
No.
Okay.
It's just your birthday. I want to hear what you're thinking.
Yeah. I mean, Heidi's song, Raggedy Ann and Andy's musical adventure. Gosh, what else is there? I know I have a list somewhere.
There's always a list.
Yeah.
But that just means that there are more things to listen to in the future, right?
Yes.
What was your favorite part about watching everything with your like with your friends tonight? Like hands down, is it the dungeon scene?
Well, I know that's your favorite part.
It's my favorite. I'm going to push that forever.
I really do think that probably was my favorite tonight, because like that was, you know, I felt it was palpable that everybody was paying attention and like, you know, interacting with what was going on. Although we did have like the celebrity bingo, which was really fun. Although Matt won bingo after the first three celebrities appeared. So good guess, I guess.
In the credits. Do you have any parts that like held up from your childhood that you loved?
I love Paul Simon's bit, because I just love Paul Simon.
He's a cutie.
And as uncomfortable as the scene is with Mary and the Lamb, like it's still like the best acted part.
It's
and
so
I
good.
Love Cyndi Lauper. Oh, yeah, those parts.
Well, cool. You have anything else you want to say?
Oh, I'm good.
Well, you want to sign us off and officially release me from hosting?
I've got the power again. It feels good. All right. Well, this has been Memory Static, and you know, return your videos here.
Hey, can I get everyone to say happy birthday to Bailey on mic?
Happy birthday, Bailey!
Thank you.
Birthday.
Once upon a rhyme. A poem by Mother Obtuse. There once were two words, we'll call them word one and word two. These words were unheard, which turned them quite blue. Yes, the unheard words were a lonely two. Until one day, while worrying, as unheard words do, they looked up at the blue sky just as two blue birds flew by. So they called to the blue birds, "Oh, blue birds, can you hear us? We're words yet unheard, and we'd wish for a try. We'd be not so lonely if you'd only come near us." But though the birds saw them, they gave but a whistle, and one bird dropped a turd on word one's head. It bristled. These birds surely can hear us, but they don't understand. It's time to get serious. Come, I have a plan. So word one took word two on a run to the zoo, for it wanted to do something drastic. Word two, said word one, the zoo is quite fun, and the animals there are fantastic. They gibber and jabber, they squawk and they quack, they bray and they neigh and they whinny. We'll find one to talk us, then no one will mock us, and then we'll be spoken by many. They visited all the exhibits that day, searching for the most vibrantly vocal. They settled at last on the chimpanzee clan, whose loud mouths were resoundingly social. "How do you do?" said word two to the group. "Please excuse our interrupting your preening. We two humble words hope that someone will speak us to give our existence some meaning." The chimpanzees scanned them with quizzical eyes till the leader approached them with grace. Then he reached behind him and threw a monkey surprise right in the astonished word's face. The monkeys guffawed as the words left in shock, cursing the irreverent species. Then word two found a sink, but not for a drink, but to wash off the irreverent feces. Word one, said word two, as it washed and it stewed. For a moment I was almost ecstatic, but as happy as freedom from silence would make me. I'm covered with crap and I've had it. Word two, said word one, this war can be won. I have one final plan to explain. But before it got the chance, they both lost the balance and slid down into the drain. What is this strange place? Word two scrunched his face. This tunnel smells foul as that monkey. It's a sewer, one answered. It holds human waste. That's why it looks gross and smells funky. Word one set to brooding on everything human, till that brooding turned into a thought. I've got it, by gum! We'll get our outcome! Let us strike while the iron is hot! Yes, they ran and they climbed through the muck and the grime till they found they were in a white room. The human will find us and speak us, word one chimed. I'm surer than sure as the moon. And surer than sure as the moon came the human, reporting for its daily duty. It flipped up the lid and out the word slid for the human to gaze on their beauty. Honey, the human called, I've got some bad news. This is it, thought the desperate pair. The toilet has gotten backed up again, dear. There's piss and there's shit everywhere. The end.
Memory Static is hosted by Bailey Moore and produced and edited by me, Eric Dumig. Special thanks to Aaron Brothers for being the host of this month's episode, and special thanks to Bailey Moore for being the guest. Original music for this episode is by Bailey and Cullen Moore, with an extra thank you to Chaney Moore for playing the voice of Mother Obtuse. If you like the show, you can subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, and if you're on iTunes, please consider giving us a rate and review, as this will help us get out to more ears. A warm thank you to Chewy for hosting the party. And as always, thank you to our partygoers for coming on out and watching the movie with us. Thanks for listening.